I'm Casper Zoggovins, Dogman, and listening to Sixth Sense Podcast.
Welcome to the Father's Day edition of the Sixth Sense Podcast. A very happy Father's Day out there to all the fathers, soon-to-be fathers, and mothers who marry fathers and keep them in line. This is the Sixth Sense Podcast. Today, we have a very special guest, and we have some time commitments here. So we're going to get right to the phones and talk with Senators prospect Chris Weidman, 100th overall pick in 2009, real up-and-comer in the NCAA, sure to turn head at the prospect camps again this summer. Let's get right to Chris on the phone. Chris, how are you today?
Good, how are you?
Excellent, excellent. Beautiful day here in Ottawa.
So, Chris, tell us a little bit about your background. We saw that you were born in St. Louis, and that, for a Canadian hockey fan, we kind of see that as, like, the unconventional route for an American player. We see most of the players come from, like, up north states like New York, Massachusetts, the Eastern Seaboard. So why don't you tell us a little bit about that to start?
Yes, very, very, very unconventional. My parents had season tickets for the Blues when I was growing up, so I was able to attend a bunch of games, luckily, and loved the sport, skated a few times, and they signed me up for hockey when I was about 4 years old, and I played minor hockey in St. Louis for a bunch of years, and I was fortunate enough to be coached by former Blues player Basil McRae around the Bantam age, and we started playing AAA and made a few trips to Toronto and to Detroit and places like that, and really started to fall in love with the game, and after my first midget year, I was drafted by the Cedar Rapids Rough Riders in the USHL and played their first season and was able to get a scholarship at Miami University. And I'm here now and was drafted by the Senators after my freshman year. And it's been a pretty cool ride, a lot of different experiences.
So I'm a little surprised here to hear Basil McRae's coaching. That's amazing. Can you tell us a little bit more about your minor hockey experiences in the St. Louis area? What kind of interest is there from kids? We always assume that people in St. Louis and the South are more interested in football and basketball. What was it like being a teenager playing hockey?
It was actually, first of all, the St. Louis hockey is expanded probably times 10 since I played. When I was there, there was probably 10 local teams and one AAA team, and now there's two AAA teams and probably about 15 or 20 teams. And I was really fortunate. We were coached by a bunch of ex-Blues players. Rob Ramage helped out, obviously Basil McRae, Jeff Brown. So we were very fortunate. And now you have guys like Keith Tkachuk, Al McInnes that are involved with programs. So St. Louis hockey is really expanding. It's been really cool to watch. So as a kid, you know, a lot of your friends are playing soccer, football, basketball, and you're playing hockey. So it was a little different, but it was kind of cool. You know, you were doing something a little different, and it was a lot of fun.
You got to be pretty jacked up though, as a kid playing amateur sports, and you have these professional guys coaching you. That has to get you pretty worked up.
Yeah, it was pretty cool. One of my best friends growing up was Phil McRae. He actually plays for the Blues now, and we always talk about, you know, how lucky we are to be involved with a program like that. You see a lot of other programs, you know, even in big hockey cities, don't get coaching like that. And so, you know, we feel very fortunate, and without them, we probably wouldn't be where we are today.
Absolutely. So one thing I got to ask you here, because I'm sure a lot of people are wondering the same thing, is can you clarify what the deal is with University of Miami, Ohio?
I'd be very proud to do that, because Miami University is the actual title of the school, and a lot of people say, Ohio, or throw Ohio in the end of it, but it's actually Miami University, and people always say that it was a university before Florida was a state, so they don't like when people throw Ohio in the end of it, but it's pretty cool. It's a small school in southwest Ohio, and it's in a tiny town, and it's an absolute blast.
I'd imagine you probably don't want to be confused with the academia down in the University of Miami in Florida.
No, both are very good schools, but we get that all the time traveling through airports. People are like, "Oh, they have hockey in Florida," and we laugh it off. But you'd be surprised at how many people are confused by that.
So, when you were going through the recruiting process for school, what made you decide to go there as opposed to another school?
I came here on a midget tournament. We played here on campus, and it's real close to home. The coaches obviously were a big part of that. They were younger guys, and really stressed the family atmosphere, and something I've always wanted to be a part of. And I came here for a midget tournament and fell in love, and I really didn't want to go anywhere else. I talked to a few other schools, but my recruiting process was pretty much wanting to come here. And when we found the fit, it was a no-brainer. It was yes right away. So I was very fortunate to have that experience.
Now, was there ever any debate in your mind about whether or not you would consider playing junior hockey in the CHL in Canada, or was that even an option for you?
I think it was an option. I've always been a smaller guy, so I wasn't drafted in the OHL. And after my year in the USHL, I talked to the London Knights a little bit in the OHL. I just had the connection through Basil McRae. He was in the ownership group there, and it was an option, but I'd made the commitment to come here, and it was something that I felt strongly about, and I want to follow through with my commitment.
Chris, for the listeners who maybe aren't too familiar with your game, how would you describe your game, and what are your strengths and weaknesses as a player?
I'd describe my game as a two-way defenseman. I like to jump into the rush, like to contribute offensively, but I've really been focused on my defense the last year, just trying to make sure that I'm strong in my own zone and, obviously responsible on that end of the ice. I like to contribute on the power play. That's kind of been my role here, quarterback to power play, and it's something that I really enjoyed doing and tried to expand every year. I'd say strengths, probably my skating, passing, just vision on the ice, knowing where to distribute the puck and when I can, kind of take it myself. And weaknesses, probably just lack of size and strength. It's obviously harder for me to lean on bigger guys, but that's where I kind of have to rely on my skating and my smarts, or else can become pretty difficult.
Well, fortunately, brains usually seem to trump brawn, so that's very good to hear. So let's skip ahead a little bit here, not too much. You were the Senators' fourth-round selection, 100th overall, in 2009, rather. Can you walk us through the draft process? Maybe, a few months leading up to the draft, did you have any communication with teams, and were you surprised to be drafted?
I wish I could lie and say that I talked to a bunch of teams all year, and I had the luxury of spending time with a bunch of GMs like most guys. But it was a thing where I had talked to my agent a few times, and he said that he'd spoken to a few teams, and I knew that teams had come to watch me play during the season. So I kind of had an idea that I'd be taken, and to be drafted by the Senators, obviously a big Canadian hockey market, was really exciting, and in the fourth round was even more unbelievable. So it was kind of I wouldn't say a surprise, but I was definitely kind of taken back, and it was an exciting day, very exciting day.
Yeah, because you're looking at your hockey stats earlier, and you've put up fantastic numbers across the board, even in the USHL and in college, so I don't think that should be too much of a surprise. But after you found out you were drafted by Ottawa, what was your reaction to being drafted by a Canadian team? How much did you know about the city and the program as a whole?
I actually didn't know much about the city at the time. I knew it was the capital, but it was cool to get there and just to see how much people really, really love the game. I handed my passport to the guy at the airport, and he knew who I was. He knew that I had been drafted, and that's something you don't see in St. Louis. Like, obviously the Blues are big, but you got the Rams and the Cardinals who are, taking a lot of the spotlight. So, to be drafted to a big Canadian hockey market, obviously there's a lot of pressure there, if you ever end up playing for the team. But it's unbelievable to see the support at development camp, people coming out and watching practice and all that. So it's really awesome.
I was talking to Tim earlier, and today's Father's Day, obviously, and we were thinking draft day, it's so good for you as a player because you put in so much effort, work, and dedication to the game, and you're finally rewarded by getting drafted. How much did it mean for your parents and your father in particular on draft day?
First of all, I'd like to say happy Father's Day to all the fathers out there, including my own dad. I'm obviously not able to spend time with him today because I'm at school and he's at home, but I'd like to say happy Father's Day. And draft day obviously was big for me personally, but it's also a big day for everybody's families. a lot of sacrifice goes into to being a hockey parent, getting up early and, you know, driving your kids all the way across the country, whether it's in the U.S. or Canada. And it really is. It was really special to share that with my family. Obviously, you know, it's very emotional, and, you know, it really is kind of a great recognition, and not only for the player but also the family.
Perfect. Now, one question I always like to ask prospects who've been drafted is, how did you actually find out that you had been selected? There's always a good story behind it.
Well, this is a great story because I wish I could say that I thought I was going to go in the fourth round, but I really wasn't planning on getting drafted that early. So I went to breakfast with all my buddies just to kind of get my mind off of it. And I had my phone with me, but in my pocket, and I missed about four or five of the calls from the Sens. So I didn't find out until my agent got a hold of me about an hour later. And I was able to call my dad and let him know. And it was, you know, he couldn't believe it either. My mom, they were all going nuts. So it was pretty cool.
And how did you celebrate that night?
We enjoyed ourselves a little bit, but had to keep it in mind that I was going to be at development camp in 2 days. So got to celebrate with the family, aunts, uncles, everybody came over, and it was a lot of fun. Great experience.
That's awesome.
And how have you done with the development camps? What have those helped to open your eyes towards in terms of, you know, pining the options of being an NHL player one day?
It really gives you a sense of what's really out there. Obviously, I don't get to play against the guys in the CHL or the American League and even the guys in Europe, but you can really stack yourself up against other guys and see where you stand. And then there's also a learning process, whether it's, you know, the nutrition side or the strength training side. There's a lot out there that, you know, you can learn. And development camp, especially the Sens development camp, they do a lot of good seminars and teaching points, and it's been really helpful, you know, for me to take this stuff back to school and, you know, apply it to my everyday life.
What kind of correspondence do you have as an NCAA player with the Senators organization?
They send, obviously, their training packet for the summer. And, you know, it's one of those things where, like, well, we're at school right now, and it's hard to implement, you know, a lot of their stuff. I'm able to do some of it because we have our own thing that we're doing here. But when I go home next week, I'm actually going to be able to do a little bit more, which is good, because I feel like the stuff that, you know, they want you to do is what's going to get you to the next level. And so it's all good. It's good to have, you know, two sides, you know, what we're doing at school, and then also, you know, what they expect out of their players and prospects.
So as of this season, Ottawa has recently seen a lot of their NCAA grads work their way up from the AHL and I guess now cracked the roster, and we just had a few players sign some nice big bucks contracts, entry-level ones. What does it mean to you as an NCAA player to see the amount of success and the possibilities and the opportunity that the Ottawa Senators provide for their NCAA students?
It's really exciting. Obviously, if you're an NCAA guy, you're rooting for, you know, other NCAA guys, even if they went to your rival school like Louis. You know, he's obviously a great player, and I'm really happy for him. I was happy to see one of my buddies here, Pacanoni, they signed him. That was really exciting. And Stefan DaCosta, they signed him too, which was pretty cool. He's probably one of the better players in college hockey this year. So it's awesome to see the opportunity. And, you know, if you work hard, you know, there is an opportunity out there. So that's always, you know, good to know and good to look forward to.
I think one of the best elements of having all the collegiate grads on the Senators now, certainly from a fan point of view, beside from the quality of hockey on ice, is the fantastic interviews that they give, yourself included now.
And Louis came on a couple months ago, and he was fantastic as well. It's just nice and refreshing to get these non-canned hockey answers. It's fantastic.
Oh, yeah, it's fun. You know, in college, I think that, you know, you learn obviously in the classroom, but, you know, most of your learning is out of the classroom, whether it's on the ice or, you know, away from the rink. You really learn how to become a full-rounded person, and it's been a great experience, and that's, you know, obviously one of the reasons why I wanted to stick around and finish school. It's, you know, it's a once-in-a-lifetime experience, especially at a school like this, and, you know, you really have to take advantage of all the time you spend here.
And if you don't mind me asking, what's your major at school? And if you weren't going to be a hockey player, what would you be doing with yourself?
I am a marketing major, and that is a very tough question because as a senior, that's getting scary. You know, you really realize that, you know, you're done with school and you either, you know, have to play or have to find a job. So, obviously I'd like to do something, in marketing, maybe something in sports marketing, but, it's kind of scary because you see how hard those people work, every day. And, you know, you don't want to do, you don't want to have a job, coming right out of college. So, we'll see. I don't know what's going to happen, but, it's nice to have a degree to fall back on.
Now, Chris, before we let you go, typically at the end of each of our interviews, we do like a quick hit segment, where we just kind of throw out a bunch of questions to you and you just give us like the first thing that pops into mind. Do you mind sticking around for that?
Cool.
All right. First question for you. Best crowd chant at an NCAA hockey game?
I like the Civ chant after we score at home, they get on the other goalie. I think that's pretty funny.
All right. Aside from the Civ chant, what's the best Miami hockey tradition?
Best tradition would probably be the band. We have an awesome hockey band. They come on the road with us to the NCAA tournament and to the league championships. So they're awesome. They're always behind us, and they make it fun.
What is the biggest bird class that you took at school?
The biggest
bird class. The biggest bird class, like the easiest class you've taken at school.
Oh, I took basic ice skating when I was a sophomore. That might be the best answer you've ever gotten for that question. I don't know anybody that's taken that class besides guys on our team.
So there's no pairs figure skating involved?
Actually, there was. We were in class with we have a synchronized skating team here, all girls, and we paired up with two of them. It was me and a teammate, and two of them, and we did a little performance at the end of the year to make sure that we got an A.
Are you familiar with Battle of the Blades, the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation show, which has former hockey players figure skating?
I believe Kelly Chase did that, and I saw a clip of him doing that. He's big in St. Louis minor hockey too, and I had a chance to play for him as a kid. So that was pretty cool to see.
Well, there's another option if hockey doesn't work out, I guess.
exactly.
And conversely, I'll ask you, what's the most challenging course that you've taken so far?
I would say both the accounting classes, managerial and financial accounting, have been the biggest task for me. I don't like crunching numbers, and that wasn't very fun.
All right, you participate on Twitter. You're keen. You have the social media savvy. If you had to suggest someone for us to follow, who should we follow on Twitter?
This is a tough one. Probably Justin Vive, one of my teammates. He's an absolute riot, and he I don't know. I mean, he gets tweeted at by Bob McKenzie and John Buchagross from ESPN all the time. They seem to love him, so I actually can't figure out why, but people seem to love him, so everybody out there, you might want to check him out. He's pretty funny.
Actually, Louis's not bad on Twitter either, is he? He's pretty
funny. Louis's good. Louis's a funny kid, and I like playing against Louis during the season. He's always trying to come after you and crack a joke or something in the middle of the game, so it's fun.
All right, as Canadians, we're enamored with the idea of American spring break. I guess you can blame MTV for that. How did you spend your spring break this year?
We were in beautiful Sault Ste. Marie, Michigan. It was a 14-hour bus ride for us. And while a lot of guys' girlfriends were in Punta Cana or somewhere down in Mexico or something like that, we were on the bus and enjoying that. So it was fun.
Excellent. Well, my condolences or my congratulations, one or the other.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, Chris, thanks for coming on the show. We hope you had a good time, and hopefully we'll get an opportunity to talk to you again soon.
Yeah, thanks a lot for having me. It was fun.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thanks for coming on.
And best of luck at development camp this year.
All right, thank you very much.
All right, take care, man.
See you later.
Enjoyed that interview. Very personable guy.
Oh, absolutely.
Very likable too.
Just fantastic.
Has a sense of humor.
Smart guy. If figure skating, marketing, or hockey doesn't pan out, I'm sure he could be a broadcaster.
Yeah, no, he did very well for himself. I was really impressed. Mind you, you listen to guys who come through the system lately, like guys like Colin Green, even Ryan Shannon, who we didn't really have an opportunity to listen to too often because he wasn't really high on Ottawa's depth chart. But, yeah, they're collegiate grads. They're just very well-spoken and articulate guys. And I find it makes the team more enjoyable, and you want to actually get to know these guys a little bit better because they don't give you, like, those recycled hockey shtick answers that they've been spouting in junior hockey since the age of 16, you know?
Yep. And Colin Greening and Eric Condra, of course, who had that fantastic piece in The Charlatan in the Carleton University newspaper where we're recording at currently.
Yeah, that's right. I forgot about that.
Who had nothing but praise for the Notre Dame program and, you know, the education he received as well as the hockey training he received. And now he's an NHL talent.
Well, hopefully we'll be seeing Chris in Ottawa sometime soon. But let's just get right into this because it's a week before the draft. Tons of scenarios are being thrown around. We've seen like the first two episodes of Senate Reform on Sense TV. What are your thoughts as we're about a week away?
It's interesting. I think we're going to start seeing a lot more speculation. The draft talk in Ottawa has obviously been in high gear for the past few months now, since we've had nothing else to look forward to, and everyone's sick about talking about Vancouver. So, obviously, I think the whole NHL is going to catch draft fever at this point, which is great. We've seen some great interviews on Senate Reform, behind-the-scenes looks. We've heard some great radio interviews with some of the scouts. Tim Murray has been on talking about it. Brian Murray's been talking about the draft. We know that the Senator's position may not be written in stone. They may be looking to move, which adds all the more intrigue to an already, you know, interesting draft, right?
Yeah, it's not even so much as what are they going to, like, who are they going to select? It's will they move up? Will they not move up? And you kind of assume with the 21st overall selection and with Nashville's pick that they will try and move that pick up. But it'd be interesting to see them move up both picks. I wonder if that's even in the cards.
I think that's absolutely possible. We've heard Brian Murray referenced before, and you know, you can't reiterate it enough that the team really does value quality over quantity. And you know, just with the the sheer amount of picks they have, and you know, contract limitations. What is it? 50 contracts an NHL team can carry at one point. At some point, and there's already a massive flux of players entering the AHL this year that will be, and some people who are graduating to the big team. So it's going to be interesting to see what they do with them. But the one thing I'm really curious about is we've seen all the draft rankings from Central Scouting, ISS. We've talked to private scouting agencies. Corey Pronman, we've talked with
Gus Caceros from McKean's Hockey.
Yeah, absolutely. And these guys, and we've seen the Redline Report rankings, yep. All these things. And what I'm curious to see is how the NHL teams themselves rank these players. You heard so much that there's no, you know, clear-cut elite talent in this year's draft. So I'm really interested to see how the teams themselves actually rank these players and how the draft unfolds. Because there's been so much speculation, and I really think people are going to have headaches watching the draft because it's all going to be thrown out the window.
It reminds me of the Senate Reform videos where the guys are just sitting around a table, and then you get the overlaid audio. I forget which scout was talking, but they're like, it's tough to come to a consensus because everybody has their favorite players, and like they'll fight for those guys, and you want to bring out that kind of, you know, it's not combative nature between the scouts where they're just pushing for different guys, but how they arrive to it is kind of funny to watch. It's like playful banter.
It's passion, and I guess from what we've seen, especially from Oil Change, which was another fantastic behind-the-scenes draft outlook for the Oilers, at the end of the day, it's the head scout who has the final decision. And that's what's going to be really interesting because obviously these guys are hell of talent evaluators and know exactly what they're doing. And I've got complete faith regardless. I mean, you and I both talked privately about, players that we would love to see in Senators uniforms next year. But at the end of the day, we haven't been watching these kids for years. We don't know what the hell we're talking about either. So we can only hope that the Senators will make the best possible decision as they have in years past.
Did you see the article? I think it was Wayne Scanlon's article this morning, actually, in The Citizen that said Brian Murray had kicked the tires with Tambellini in Edmonton just to see what the cost of acquiring this first-round pick would be. And it had to do with a little right-handed defenseman.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I'm pretty sure it was referencing Carlson.
Well, of course, you're going to ask for the moon and the stars, right? Of course.
Oh, absolutely.
Who wouldn't want to have... How old is Carlson right now? 20, 21?
20, he might just be turning 21 now.
Yeah. Entry-level contract. The guy's already been an all-star. You know, he's a stud. What more do you want, right? Of course, that's what you'd ask for. If we were in the same position, that's what I'd be looking for as well. Is it going to happen? But we've also heard rumors that the New Jersey pick is up for sale as well. and the Islanders could move. So I guess it really depends on how the draft boards fall, right? You know, it's entirely plausible to believe that the Senators have two guys ranked 1 through 5 that they could feasibly get at 6 and 21. Who knows, right?
I think the intrigue surrounding this year's draft in particular, especially with the top 10 picks, is you don't know the order that they're going to go in. Aside from probably Ryan Nugent Hopkins at 1, you have no idea who's going to go where. Whether Huberto goes 2, Larson goes 2, or whether teams trade up to get the guy that they want, I think there could be a ton of activity on draft day, especially involving the Senators. And it's going to be really interesting to watch, and that's why I'm really glad that I have to pick up my girlfriend from the airport on Friday night and might have to miss a little bit of the first couple picks.
Yeah, I've been trying to get my girlfriend to schedule her hair appointment for Friday night, but the place isn't open late enough, so yeah, there'll have to be compromises. But anyways, one thing that also intrigues me as well is I know very little about the 2012 draft class, but from all accounts, it's very rich in defensemen.
Yep.
So I wonder how much that's going to affect the stock of some of these players like Adam Larson or Dougie Hamilton or Duncan Siemens and some of these guys, right?
Where teams roll the dice on a bit of a higher ceiling prospect who might be a forward, who might not pan out, as opposed to a defenseman because they know they're there down the road.
Yeah, exactly. And there's often a trend with you know, lottery teams and teams drafting in the top 10 that you could say that they generally have a hard time putting pucks in the net, right? I mean, as much as you can have a hard time, you know, preventing them from getting in, usually it's good to be able to put them in as well. So who knows if teams are going to be willing to roll a dice on a higher ceiling offensive talent than on maybe you know, a safe bet defenseman at this point.
I was going to ask you, as we draw closer to this draft, are the fears and concerns about Gabriel Landeskog kind of manifesting a bit? Like,
ultimately, I think that they need to pick someone at 6 or 21 who is going to be NHL ready next year. I think it's important for the team to be able to have you know, a tangible conveyor.
Shiny diamond that you can point to and say, hey, look who's here.
Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. Like, you got to have someone on the ice next year. The Senate reform has really shown how much the organization is stressing and marketing this soon-to-be draft pick already. So it's going to be crucial for the organization, I think, to have someone who is at least projected to be able to step in or maybe, you know, at least get 9 games in before being returned to wherever they go.
No, that's a fair point, though, because from what we can gather and muster from listening to the media or the hockey ops personnel speak is that the team's not going to be an active participant on the free agent market on July 1st. So unless the team makes a couple few splashes via trade, essentially probably the top draft picks is what you're looking forward to the most, right? Aside from Cowan and Rundblad graduating from the system and then coming up next year to play.
And the other wrench in that engine as well is all these kids who had fantastic AHL runs this year. You know, is this the year Cody Bass maybe gets a look, or Jim O'Brien, or Dogman, right? Like, these are all candidates. Maybe instead of going out and signing some of these guys, we keep hearing these names thrown at us, right? Scotty Upshaw,
Billy Lino.
Yeah, like, the list just goes on, right? These guys who are going to cost
Patrick Lalime.
Guys are going to cost you an arm and a leg to bring in, you know, for no good reason otherwise than to tie up a roster spot and to make this team slightly more competitive and have a veteran presence. But, you know, I think that these are all worthwhile things to consider with the team moving forward. And, you know, if you can allocate that spot, obviously there's a gaping hole at the number 2 center this year with Mike Fisher being gone.
Do you think they'll sign Shannon?
If I had to guess, yes. I really do. And I'm not opposed to it. I'm not opposed to it whatsoever.
If he's a stopgap player, if it's like a multi-year deal, I'd be kind of...
Yeah, like Ryan Shannon, to me, if you sign him to a 1 year, to a nice contract, if you can pay him for, you know, the time and commitment he's given to Ottawa, and flip him at the deadline to a contender, put him in a nice situation like Chris Kelly, and go from there, right?
I think that's a goal for most of this. And I was kind of working on a piece earlier this week, and I've kind of like put it aside for now. But like looking at the goaltending position, I think there are a number of, and this kind of goes back to Jonah Carey's book, right? The Extra 2%, where you're always looking for like a market inefficiencies, and you find like these young players who might have had pedigree success at the NHL level, even if it was for a small sample size, and hope you sign those guys on the cheap and then hope they pan out. It's kind of like Ray Emery with Anaheim this year, right?
Yep.
Reclamation project, same principle. But I look at the goaltending market and I see a couple young guys who are coming off some bad years where they have had pedigree. I assume you could probably even lump Pascal Leclerc into that group, even though you'd never touch a guy like that again. But like guys like Mike Smith, who might be who might come for cheaper than he would normally, right? Or a Josh Harding who's coming off ACL surgery.
Carlson. But
and Henrik Carlson in Calgary. And there are a few examples of if Craig Anderson gets hurt, you want a guy who could step in, play, hopefully thrive, and then you can flip him for like assets at next year's deadline or next offseason if a team wants to roll the dice on that guy in the starter's capacity.
And also, the other thing is, if you look at the way the Senators' depth chart's developed as well, if they can bring in a high-ceiling backup, suddenly you may have three competent goalies in the system. And, you know, who's to say if Lehner doesn't have a stellar year or stellar start to the AHL campaign, maybe Anderson gets hurt, he takes the number one spot and runs with it. Suddenly, you have this incredible trade chip at your doorstep in Craig Anderson, who signed to a very reasonable contract for a man of his stature and capabilities. And just like in baseball, right, you're always going to get a ton of value back for a good catcher.
Exactly. And you don't have to sign those like one-year stopgap guys who are just there essentially to fill a body. And it's just signing a guy like Patrick Liam doesn't make a ton of sense to me. It's just a waste. It's you know exactly what you're getting, and it's a guy who's on the tail end of his career who had a miserable season in Buffalo. You can't count on that guy.
Like, it's so short-sighted because we booed this guy out of town when he left, and all of a sudden things have changed because he's donned the Senators' jersey before. I mean, I'm sure he's a great guy, and I'm sure he likes the city of Ottawa. I'd like it even more if I'd spent the past few years in Buffalo as well. But at the same time, you got to be able to think logically about the way that the team's going. And
but that's the flip side of the coin, right? You have a rebuilding team that the playoff expectations. Like, yeah, it'd obviously be fantastic if the young players graduated through the system and then kickstarted the team and spurred this team to a playoff seed.
Of course,
but like that's best case scenario, right? Like realistically, the team's probably going to finish as what, like a 9-12 seed, probably.
Yeah, 9 might even be high. It depends on Anderson. It really does. But
so what's signing a veteran stopgap player going to do? And ultimately, why would they sign with Ottawa on a rebuilding team?
And they're going to be expensive.
Exactly.
To bring in a guy with a name as opposed to bring in a guy who's...
Well, it's like I had this conversation with a guy on Twitter the other day. And he was like, oh, we should totally go and sign Brooks Like to be our second line center. It's like...
There's another name. Yeah.
No. It's like Mike Fisher Redux. And like I even said that. I'm like, it's the Mike Fisher thing all over again. He's a second, third line hybrid center. He's like, yeah, he'd be a very good third line center on a fantastic team. But if you're counting on that guy for second line production... It's the same situation. It's like, yeah, fantastic character guy. Everything hits, skates well. And it is. It's like Mike Fisher all over again.
Are you seeing any parallels between these guys we've brought up and that we aren't the first ones to bring up? The Upshaws, the Leno, all these guys. They're all complementary players on good teams. And ultimately, that's what they should be viewed as. These are guys who are going to help your already solid team get to the next level, right? And provide that necessary depth at these positions. These aren't the guys the Senators should be looking for long term. Like, I mean, if you're going to sign them to a one-year contract and be able to flip them at the deadline, that's great. And to bring in another asset. But
Ottawa should be trying to do exactly what the Islanders did last year with Michael Grabner.
Yeah, brilliant move.
And it's just you get the guys who had a young upside. Maybe they haven't shown it yet, but at least they still have that pedigree. Give them an opportunity, see what happens, and if they become productive NHL players, either you sign them long-term like the Islanders did with Grabner, or you flip them and recoup some assets, recoup some future assets. Build, keep building, keep getting that momentum.
Another guy who I'd like to bring into the debate now after we've finished hauling on Kyle Turris is Cody Hodgson, who by all accounts isn't going to have a roster spot next year in Vancouver. It sounds like every time the guy makes a mistake, he's thrown in the press box for a while, which is he's a strong talent. Obviously, he had some back issues, some misdiagnosed back issues in his time in Vancouver. Maybe an unfair stigma applied to him, perhaps. There's a guy you go out and you try and get. He's shown he can play the professional game. With success in the AHL. He can play in the NHL.
Exactly.
He didn't look out of place when I saw him, at least.
It's almost like what Jason Spezza was during that New Jersey Devils run, right? Like he was just a power play guy. They played him like fourth-line minutes playing with crappy fourth-line players. And even if you want to compare it to something this season, like Peter Regan was in that situation for a while where he was buried on the fourth line with guys like Jesse Winchester. I know like...
Yeah, nightmare scenario well, year for him.
Yeah, like Peter Regan doesn't have the upside that Cody Hodgson has. But it's one of those situations where even Ryan Shannon, for example, he graduates off the fourth line. They give him second line minutes, second line power play time, and all of a sudden he starts to flourish a little bit because he has that offensive skill. And everyone acts surprised, like, oh, why wasn't he doing this all along? It's, you're limited to your line mates. You're limited to your minutes. And Cody Hodgson would be another interesting player to consider to bring in, depending on what the cost is, because I'm sure Vancouver would be looking for an interesting piece. If you could, maybe Nick Foligno would be a guy who I would consider trading.
Pete Regan's also another change of scenery candidate. As much as I like the guy and the way he plays, and I really think he's a candidate for a strong bounce back year this year. I mean, it's hard to get
worse. I just don't know if
he'd
be a sexy. He plays a strong two-way game, and he has that. You can see there's the offensive talent there. It's just they need to bring that out. And I don't know if he'll be able to do that in Ottawa, because I don't think we have the personnel right now to do that for him. I just don't know if a Stanley Cup contender like Vancouver would look at a guy like Pete Regan and say, yeah, let's bring him in and roll the dice and like give that guy an opportunity to flourish there.
But if anyone,
and if it happened, I'd be livid.
If anyone's going to be able to, up their value and their stakes in the Senators this year, playing under John McClain, it's going to be a guy like Pete Regan, who's very excellent skater, good on the forecheck, smart hockey player, good hands. He seems like a perfect candidate to be fixed by McClain, right? Mm-hmm. And even a guy like Ryan Shannon, these are guys I could see playing in Detroit in some capacity, and maybe not being the go-to guys, but being very strong pieces to the puzzle. Yep. So, anyways, back to the draft here. It's going to get interesting. In a real hurry. I think every Sens fan's going to be holding their breath to see Gary Bettman step up to the podium at any given moment and say, we have a trade to announce. And failing that, I think that we can almost be guaranteed to see a lot of second guessing of the Senators' decisions at the sixth spot the day after. I think that's going to be a huge source of contention. People have been obsessed with these prospects all year in the nation's capital. People already have their favorites picked out. Everyone is assured that they have the right guy in their pocket, and they know better than the Sens organization. So I think that backlash is going to be hilarious to watch, personally.
It's always fun at this time of year, because it's silly season, right? Like, everybody has their own plan. It's just armchair GM fanaticism at its greatest. But it's fun. It's fun to watch, because a lot of people get passionate with their opinions on what the Senators should and should not be doing. And it's just fun to see the bickering and the dialogue and the conversation. It's just it's an interesting time of year.
I think we need to do a new blog entry titled The Draft Revisited Through the Eyes of the Ottawa Sun. And we can maybe go through those Matt Zeltek articles.
About Erik Karlsson is a garbage pick. Yeah.
Yeah, Carlson's a garbage pick. Matt Zeltek should have been picked over Marian Hossa.
You learn your lessons by doing that, though. And, yeah, like, it came at a time when the 67s were winning the Memorial Cup, and Matt Zoltek was considered a power forward. Ottawa didn't have that. They never had that. And yeah, we draft this guy who's named Marion, and it raises concerns. But I don't think you've seen an article, aside from Tom Brennan's article about Karlsson being a garbage pick, I don't think you've seen, that was written by Stevenson, the Hossa article. So you haven't really seen them criticize the process too much after the fact, right?
No, Cowan was very, very well received in his pick. I remember Bruce Garriott saying that was a great steal for them to be able to get it at that slot. And Jared's done nothing but to prove everyone right. He might end up being one of the top three players from that draft, actually.
Well, you cross your fingers. But yeah, you can look at that knee injury that he sustained and look at that as a blessing in disguise, because he actually allowed him to slide to 9, because that was a guy who was considered a consensus top three pick.
Yeah, it was him and Hedman. I remember at the beginning of the year in September, he was one of the guys considered to be on the same level as Hedman. And after watching Hedman play in the NHL, I mean, he's going to be a decent defenseman for a long time. But I think Jared Cowan might be more of a plus asset for the team. I'm going to put you on the spot right now.
Okay.
Who do we take at 6?
Who do we take at 6? I don't think we're taking at 6. I think we're moving up.
I think so, too. That's my...
Who do they take if they move up? I have a sneaking suspicion that we're getting either Huberto or Landeskog in this draft. I'm not going to beat myself up over it if neither of those players comes to the organization, but I don't know why. It's one of those things. You just have that that gut instinct that one of those two players is going to fall to us. But
yeah, if you're asking me, I think the Senators need to hit a home run with this pick. They're going to move up, whatever it takes, even if it's an overpayment, they'll be okay with that. Ultimately, at the end of the day, I think if we stay at 6, we're going to draft Mika, Zed, and I'm not even going to attempt to butcher that last name. But I think if we do move up, it's going to be for Landeskog or for Huberto, like you said.
Fantastic. All right, listeners, enjoy the draft coming up this week. Hope you enjoy the show. Thanks again to Chris Wyman for coming on the show, and have a happy Father's Day.
Absolutely. All the best to everyone out there.
Take care. Thanks for listening.